All right, welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. I'm your host, Brendan Farrell. I am once again joined by our very own James Murphy. James, how are you?
That's big if true. But yes, I'm very excited to get on a little bit of a lighter slate, but that allows us to get in depth in a way that we have not before on such topics.
Yeah, we're going to be talking a little bit of Mississippi State football because of the Texas A&M game and all the fallout from that. But you know, they're on bye, and Ole Miss is playing Washington State, and they're like a, you know, that game should be settled by, like, I don't know, four or five touchdowns probably. So no real need to discuss that one at length.
Okay, well, to be fair, Brendan, it's number one in the SEC versus number one in the Pac-12. I mean, let's not overlook this entirely now. Come on.
I know that there are only two teams in the Pac-12, but there is no number one team in the Pac-12. There's just sad and, oh, God, why?
Look, man, if Lane Kiffin said it's true, it has to be true, obviously.
Sorry, there's sad, and then there's when does baseball season start?
Shout out Michael Conforto. Oregon State legend.
So, yeah, stay tuned for, you know, we're going to talk about the SEC as a whole. Yeah, so stay tuned for that. But first, Vanelli's Bistro is turning 50, and we'd like to thank the people of Tupelo for your support all these years. We look forward to the next 50 years. Vanelli's Bistro is located at 206 West Main Street. If you want to call in your order for pickup, the number is 844-4410. Okay. James, State was on the road. They make their, like, first real big road trip of the season. First big SEC road trip of the year. And it didn't go well.
No, it did not. Let's just hit the lead on the head. Their pass protection's bad. You could talk it up to Albert Reese. You could chalk it up to the offensive line. You could chalk it up to Blake Shapen. Look, I think that much like in baseball, how people see run prevention as like an apparatus in that it involves both good pitching and good defense. I think the same we discussed last week how I think the same probably goes for pass protection. It takes the O-line, it takes the quarterback, and it takes a little bit of play calling and schematics to know when the blitz is coming and where exactly to position people in order to make sure that a pass attempt can be made. And I think it's just a collective effort where that needs to be better. That's just probably the biggest thing for me. Now, in terms of the defense, they hung in there. Now, granted, they gave up 300 yards rushing and eventually the levee broke. But in a lot of ways, they hung in there. I was impressed by that goal line stop.
There's a difference between when the levee breaks and when the levee breaks. Sorry.
Anyway.
Keep going.
They did pretty well defensively. But again, the run defense kind of worries me because this was a problem against Arizona State too and probably would have showed up more if they hadn't been able to win that game. But look, I think that it's certainly not a disaster the way you handle your first road game, especially considering that Kyle Field was insane. I think I saw the game, and there wasn't really a time when that stadium wasn't loud, except maybe the very end when the starters should have been out. More on that later. But I'm not necessarily – I don't think State fans should be terrified of where they are. But I do think that this bye week, as this Texas A&M game showed, there's plenty to work on this bye week.
Yeah, you mentioned the pass protection issues by PFF's charting. Blake Shapen, one kept clean, 11 for 13 for 130 yards and a touchdown, 88.6 offensive grade. When under pressure, 4 for 7 for 10 yards, one interception, and four sacks.
Does that include the fumble where I think it was who was it who just the ball just floated out of his hand and into like an Aggie defender who took it back?
Maybe.
I think it was Anthony Evans.
Yeah, well, maybe it would have to be because he didn't throw an interception when kept clean. So, yeah, 52.6 offensive grade there. Yeah, it's just, I mean, that's sort of been the story of State's season on offense so far. It's like when they can keep Blake Shapen clean, like he does well. When they do not, it goes very poorly. And, you know, Levy talked a little bit about trying to get Albert Reese back. We'll see where things get from here on there on that front. But pretty clear that something like what happened on Saturday can't really happen again.
You know what I'm starting to wonder now that I think about it? I wonder how much of the sacks being taken has to do with the routes being run. Jeff Lebby talks a lot about how they like to score from far, how they like to go deep a lot of times. And, you know, obviously when they hit those deep balls, really, really good things happen. But they take a while to develop, which means more time in the pocket, which means more time to get sacked. I wonder if the reason for a lot of that is because they go deep so many times, or try to go something along the lines of deep so many times, and it just kind of slows things down a little bit and allows the defense to get home. I wonder, maybe if you're Mississippi State, do you create more slant routes? You know, just more, maybe like a swing pass out of the backfield, a few more screens just to get the ball out of Blake's hands in order to make sure that he doesn't get hit as often. It's something to consider.
Yeah, I think, well, unfortunately, part of the equation is that Blake Shapen is not good at avoiding sacks this year. His pressure to sack percentage is 29.3. Usually, like, anything above 20 is bad. That is fourth among Power Four quarterbacks.
Who are the other three?
Jackson Arnold, Dylan Raiola, and Luke Altmyer. Ugh. And Jackson Arnold's the guy who took, I think, like 10 sacks against.
Wait, Luke Altmyer takes those sacks?
Yeah.
Against Illinois' offensive line?
He takes more sacks when pressured, he takes sacks more often.
Okay, got it. So it's like, I don't always get pressured, but when I do, I usually get sacked.
Yes, this is stripping away, like, you know, ignoring the quality of the pass protection in front of him. When he is pressured, how often does that turn into sacks?
Got it. Anyone else craving Dos Equis?
Yeah. You know, sponsor us. No, I'm just kidding. but, yeah, I mean, to me, that's the big thing is, Shapen's done well when kept clean, which, like, no duh, like, every quarter, you know, like, if you have a quarterback who is struggling even when kept clean, that's when it's like, you know, that's a non-starter. But, I mean, even in this game, played well when he was kept clean. Like, he's not putting the ball in danger. He's keeping the chains moving. He's throwing the ball further downfield. His average depth of target when kept clean is 12.6 yards against Texas A&M. Under pressure, 6.3, right? So, granted, though, when you're under pressure, you're just trying to, like, get the ball out of your hands and check it down. But point is, I don't know, maybe some of this is just play more of the quick game, get the ball out of your hands, like, you know.
Right, exactly. And a lot of that might have to do with give him shorter routes, you know, give him some slants, give him some screens, give him a pop pass, just give him a wheel route. Something quick and easy.
And also you mentioned, Fluff Bothwell getting injured late. There's no timetable on him. Levy said yesterday that they were, that they had, like, good news and that the pictures looked pretty good and all that. So
good news being it's not season ending.
I guess. I mean, I don't see how it could be season ending and be good news, right? But again, no timetable on that. And so I guess we'll find out at some point, right?
Right.
But you mentioned, hey, why are you still in the game? Levy was asked about that on Tuesday, and he basically said something along the lines of, like, it's like a culture thing. They want to be able to finish games and, you know, just, like, finish games on the right foot, even if it's out of reach.
Yeah, well, now he doesn't have much of a foot.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that's pretty much what he was getting at. Good news on that front, other than the apparent good news about Fluff Bothwell's health, is that they have some running back depth. So it shouldn't be too bad, but yeah, you are a little shorthanded in the running back department. And the ground game has been, like, the one really good part of their offense. So
it has, you know, Devon Booth brings you plenty in the run game. They just won't have collectively as cool of names.
I don't know. It just seems like turnovers are killing them. I mean, just overall, like, I mean, to me, I think of the turnovers because I think that there were a couple of backbreaking ones against A&M, but then obviously two that went for touchdowns against Tennessee, right? Like, that's just hard to come back from. I mean, 219 yards in a game, which is what State had against Texas A&M. That's not going to work.
It's not. And I would also kind of like to bring up the penalties. I mean, on paper, they did not have as many 3 for 35 when it seemed like most weeks they had around double-digit penalties for 100-plus yards. But one of those penalties was on the one-inch line with a chance to go up 7-0. Even if it's not a lot of penalties, the penalties they do have are absolute killers.
Yeah, and then sort of a tale of two halves. You know, State's defense held on for a half, and then the second half, Texas A&M had more yards in the second half and more points than State did the entire game. They outgained State 300-112 in the second half and outscored them 24-6.
Yeah, part of that is leaning on that ground game until eventually the wheels fell off and Texas A&M was quite literally able to run away with it.
A&M ran for 191 yards in the second half alone. They held the ball for 21 minutes and 9 seconds compared to Mississippi State's 8 minutes and 44 seconds.
They held it for 38 minutes total in the game, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's not going to do it.
No.
The defense held on until they just really couldn't anymore. This is just like genuinely like their first like really bad game of the year.
It was, but again, not a huge reason to panic. They're still in a very good spot. I think that, you know, they have a lot of goals, and they've talked about how it keeps them focused, it keeps them in a good place. I think the biggest one probably right now is making a bowl game, and if you can win two more games, you're pretty happy with what happens the rest of the way. I mean, I know that understand there's a lot of goals to get, but for being honest, some are bigger than others, and the bowl game's still right there for the taking. And I know this slate is going to be really, really tough the rest of the way after the bye week, but it's very possible. You only need two more wins.
Yes. I just think that they've been on a really interesting roller coaster ride the first 6 weeks of the year because, I mean, you start 4-0 and everybody's like, all right, you know, maybe Mississippi State is back, and then you play a heartbreaking loss at home to Tennessee, and you're like, okay, that sucked, but that's the best that they've played in a while, and then they just go out and lay an egg on the road against Texas A&M, right? And so you're like, okay, is it so over? Are we still kind of so back?
No, it's too early to say over.
But the next three games are pretty critical because, I mean, look, what I said at the beginning of the year, I was like, look, you just have to win a conference game this year, and I think people will be happy. If you're going to do that, you're going to have to do it the next 3 weeks, I think.
And I think it's feasible. Look, I understand going to Florida in the swamp is no easy task, although for USF, it seemed to work pretty well for them. I don't know. Plus, you have Texas the next week at home. I think that one is looking more and more favorable, especially given the fact that what Texas is, especially with the Arch Manning mess. And then at Arkansas, they're minus their head coach, we think, unless, of course, Bobby Petrino is in the middle of a so far successful coup. But yeah, I can see a world where they win two of those games.
Yeah. That's where they need to be before heading down the stretch, because the stretch is brutal with Georgia, Mizzou, and Ole Miss going into that run needing a win, let alone two. Bad spot to be in. Bad spot to be in. And it's difficult because it's like, well, look, the A&M game was rough, but you know, it's a hard place to play in. Okay, great. You get maybe one of the hardest places to play in the country in Florida after the bye, right? I don't know. Maybe they're in full-on meltdown mode after their own loss in College Station this weekend. Maybe that's finally the impetus to fire Billy. I don't know.
Put the copium down, Brendan.
God only knows what happens in Gainesville, which you can say for, I think, pretty much all of Florida. But that's not going to be easy. And then you just figure that... I don't know what to think of Texas, man.
Their defense is very good. Defense is probably one of the better in the country, but, you know, I think their best bet is to drag you into the mud and keep you there until the final whistle.
I think the talent disparity is probably too much for State in that game, but I guess we'll find out. Like, we'll talk about Texas in a bit. And then, yeah, I mean, we said this last year, and we'll say it again. Arkansas is Mississippi State's best shot at a conference win this year. I don't think there's much of an argument.
No, I don't think so. Again, Arkansas probably not the easiest place to play. Though compared to the where else they're going to have to go, again, there's more of an opportunity there. Then, again, it's most people would probably agree it's easier than Florida. But I think that one's going to be pretty interesting.
But, yeah, I don't know. Anything else you want to talk about on the State front?
On the State front, that's about it. But just in terms of the – actually, I'll ask you this. They got a bye week right now. What do you feel like are some of the biggest things they will slash should prioritize?
I mean, for me, it's just the typical bye week stuff. Get healthy. Get right mentally. This is one of those weird years where the calendar aligns where you get two bye weeks for some reason. So they have another bye week before the Egg Bowl. So it's not like you need to get ready for every game, but like, I think it's just good to get healthy, get right. And I think especially after the way the A&M game went, just getting away from it all for a little bit was probably just good. And then, you know, I think one of the things that this coaching staff does well is like emphasizing like every Monday is a new week. You know, we move on and keep get focused on the following Saturday.
That's true. They've been very good at that the whole year.
They're very good at circling the wagons.
Very true.
But, yeah. Anything else you want to add?
That's about it.
Great. I just had an idea of just talking about the SEC as a whole because I think I would rather do that than talk about Washington State for another 15 minutes or something.
That's fair, yeah.
I sort of made a tier list of sorts. Would you like to hear it?
Hit me.
I have put Kentucky by itself. It is in the tier of when does basketball season start?
Soon, thankfully. Them and their $10 million roster will be out there before you know it.
It's just like everything is just horrible, bad.
No awful. Good.
Yes. And then... the next tier, I didn't really know what to call it other than just kind of like pain. South Carolina, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and Auburn.
Yeah, Mississippi State in the grand scheme of things, pain. But you could argue that given by the standards they set for themselves going into the season, not so bad, not as bad pain. South Carolina, I thought they'd be better. A lot of that's probably Lenore Sellers being up. Banged up. Dylan Stewart probably still has been good, but outside of that, I guess they don't have very much.
But I mean, I numbered these, so but I mean, I put them in a tier list because to me, in the SEC this year, so much parity this year that I'm just like getting mad over who's at two and who's at four is dumb.
Yeah,
right. And so much can change. We're you know, depending on who you are, one to three or maybe even four games into this, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just feel like I didn't know what to do with State because I don't, you know, putting them at like 15 feels wrong.
Yeah.
Bad. Like, I feel like there are teams like in a mentally like worse spot. Like, I just feel like the vibes with State are not as bad as say Auburn or, Arkansas or South Carolina. That being said, I just was like, let's just group all these teams together because they sort of feel like they're in a little bit of a rough spot right now.
Yeah, very true.
And then I have a tier of disappointing big brands that have enough talent to turn things around.
Which are?
LSU, Texas, and Florida.
I'll give you LSU because they only have the one loss. Florida and Texas have a much – have. Well, I should rephrase. LSU, I will agree with you on because they only have one loss. Texas and Florida, I feel like, have much steeper hills to climb. You know, Texas, I think there's a guy, again, the defense is very good. Offensively, they look broken, and it goes back to Arch Manning. And for Florida, look, we're talking about a team with three losses. Even if they win out, it'd be very hard to work a 9-3 team into the playoff. I mean, last year there were a ton of SEC teams with nine wins, and they just didn't really get in. So I'm not sure where Florida really goes from here, even if they are able to get things going.
Yeah, I think the schedule will take care of itself. And you can only do the we're totally firing our head coach this year, right, thing for so long. Right. That being said, Lagway looked a lot better on Saturday. They got a big home win. And I don't know. There is a path there. But, I mean, the schedule is just so brutal for them that it's only a matter of time.
The path doesn't feel very wide. No. It feels pretty narrow.
But I still feel like they have enough talent to be better than South Carolina or Arkansas.
Dallas, what was his name, the wide receiver?
Dallas Wilson.
Yeah, he did look very good.
That's the infuriating part. They have a bunch of talent and the wrong person at the helm. But I guess we'll find out there. LSU, I just grouped them in there because I just don't like watching them. It just, the vibes are bad. Their team is, I mean, they're solid. They play really good defense, but it's just like, this is not LSU football right now.
No, it's definitely not their standard. Let's see. They got a pretty telling stretch. They got South Carolina, which I think is manageable, but then they got at Vanderbilt. They host Texas A&M, and they're at Alabama. Now, the funny thing about them hosting Texas A&M is I'm not sure Texas A&M is going to be that intimidated by Death Valley because they play in something that is pretty close to Death Valley. And Alabama, I think a lot of people have them winning the SEC again just on the way they've played. Ty Simpson has, at the very least, surpassed expectations. And at most, he has looked like the best quarterback in the conference. Vanderbilt obviously still has Diego Pavia. I think that stretch will tell us a lot about LSU.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever tried to sit down and try to rank all the SEC teams. It's hard, and especially this year, it's just like whoever you feel like, you know, you put at one, you just feel like you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, all I could really do was stare at the standings for a couple of minutes, and then I had to look away just like, oh boy, it's tough to make sense of all this.
And then I have a tier of could get there / still good. Ole Miss, Tennessee, A&M, Vanderbilt.
Well, Ole Miss, I'm going to argue that Ole Miss and A&M should be a tier higher. I think Marcel Reed could be one of the players that determines what happens in this conference. He's looked very, very good this season, not just against Mississippi State, but also going on the road to Notre Dame and being able to win. Takes some real gall, and he's got it. Yeah, he could be very good. Tennessee, similarly, they have Joey Aguilar and Chris Braswell, # Brazzle Dazzle, and they just have a very dynamic attack that at minimum is fun to watch, at maximum could, again, shape the fate of the conference and what happens down the road. But there's that. Ole Miss, totally reason. I get why they're there. I get why they're in that tier just because – so many years of Ole Miss football tell people that eventually they're going to drop a game that they shouldn't. And that might be true, but you also wonder, well, they have a week-by-week mindset, so does that prevent such a thing from happening? But I guess we won't know until they play the games.
Yeah, I just need them to win an SEC game by more than one possession before I feel good about them.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the The coin only lands on the same side so many times, right?
Right.
And we're going to find out a lot about Ole Miss very quickly with, you know, after watching State this week, with, you know, road trips to Athens and Norman back to back. So just something to keep an eye on. But, yeah, and then I do think Ole Miss is the most likely one of that group to sort of move up and make the playoffs and all that. I mean, I feel like anybody within that tier could probably still make the playoff, but I just feel like Ole Miss is probably the safest bet.
That sounds fair.
Of that crew. And that leaves my inside track top tier of, and really I think you could put these teams in any order. Mizzou, Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia.
You got to explain Mizzou to me.
I just, the offense, man. Bo Pribula.
I'm not sure. They do play Bama this week, so maybe they just, at the very least, put up a good fight and just kind of put people on notice. I think Mizzou needs to prove it a little bit more.
That's fair. And, you know, yes, the offensive numbers look very good for Mizzou, but they have played nobody.
Stu Gatz, as they say in Italian.
Yeah, they have played Central Arkansas, Kansas, Louisiana, South Carolina, UMass, and then Alabama.
Yeah, that's to talk about a pretty steep climb there. But what would you say the other ones were, just to be sure?
Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia.
Okay, Georgia, sure, just because they have enough talent, but I don't know if they have the talent on defense that they have had in the national championship winning years, and I wonder how that is going to affect them down the road. Alabama, as I said, Ty Simpson, you could argue, best quarterback in the SEC up to this point. My thing is, they don't stop the run, and they don't really run the ball very well, and those are things that you need to have late in the year when things are going. I co-sign Oklahoma completely. Their defense is the best in the SEC, and I think if John Mateer comes back healthy enough, you can make an argument they're SEC champs.
My thing with Oklahoma, I have two things. One, I need to see more from them offensively before I feel good. That being said, their defense is eating teams alive.
Eating like, good teams alive. They eat Michigan alive. They eat Auburn alive. Very good chance they eat Texas alive with or without Arch Manning.
They're basically like a 100th percentile defense in like every possible stat. So it's pretty incredible what they're doing on that side of the ball. And they're finally seeing at least a lot of progress on the offensive side of the ball compared to last year.
Jaden Ott helps. John Mateer has helped even now that he's hurt. Again, I think that if you can survive Texas and South Carolina, even if you drop one of them, if you just get him back for Ole Miss, you're in a pretty good spot.
The problem is that Oklahoma's schedule is brutal.
That's the issue. But again, I mean, you got Texas, South Carolina, then number 4 Ole Miss, at number 12 Tennessee, at Bama, and then Missouri and LSU. And again, LSU's problems aside, they too have a pretty good defense.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, they basically play a ranked opponent every week until the season ends after the next 2 weeks, right? So, I mean, to me, that's their big obstacle. But, I mean, it's hard to argue with the results from them so far. So, you know, we'll see where things go from there. I just want to give Mizzou their dues while I still can, because I am afraid of praising Mizzou any before potentially getting stomped by Alabama on Saturday. But I don't know. I just think they're really good. I just think they're neat.
Yeah, they're going to be an interesting team. We're going to learn a lot about them on Saturday.
Yeah, I just feel like it's a really interesting SEC race this year, because I just really feel like the top like 8 teams, like anything can happen between them.
Yeah, definitely. And the good news is a lot of them play each other, and not necessarily a complete round robin, but in enough of a way where there's going to create separation that tells us more about what the conference is and who's for real and who's not.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously big weekend this weekend. So I don't know. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you want to add?
In terms of this, no, but I think it's a good time to plug my Twitter, at JS Murphy Media. You can find a lot of my college work there. I got to see the college football playoff trophy in a Walmart. That was interesting. You can find the article for that there, as well as just all my other work at djournal.com. Also, we got an Instagram page, at djournal sports. We're getting that up and going. It's been rolling this football season. Be sure to follow that.
Did you fall to your knees in a Walmart?
No, I did not. That would be very weird.
Well,
it is my new profile picture, though.
Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter, @bferrell727. You can follow the journal at djournalsports on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that. You can, like James said, follow James on Twitter at JS Murphy Media. You can find all of our Ole Miss and Mississippi State coverage at djournal.com. Did I forget anything other than... talking about our dear friends at Vanelli's?
No, just take them to church.
All right. Once again, Vanelli's Bistro is turning 50, and we'd like to thank the people of Tupelo for your support all these years. We look forward to the next 50 years. Vanelli's Bistro is located at 206 West Main Street. If you want to call in your order for pickup, the number is 844-4410. James, thanks for joining me to talk about a lot of things.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to see how the SEC plays out.
All right, everybody, take care. Enjoy the games this weekend, and have a good one.